and welcome to the Giving Voice to Depression podcast. I'm Terry, the creator and co-host of this podcast. I've lived with depression most of my life, and I know how easy it can be to feel all alone in the experience. I'm not alone, and you aren't either.
And I'm Dr. Anita Sands, a licensed clinical psychologist with a number of my own diagnoses, all of which bring a certain amount of anxiety and depression along with them. There is great power in shared experiences. We share our own as we engage in intimate and candid conversations with our weekly guests, exploring different perspectives on and experiences with depression.
We keep it real because depression is real. We keep it hopeful because there truly is hope in spite of what depression tells you.
Hi, Terry.
Hello, Anita. So we are excited to announce a new partnership, which will allow us to continue producing our podcast and creating our daily mental health social media posts. Rehab Path, through its website, recovery.com, provides resources and information for individuals seeking treatment for mental health or addiction issues. It offers a fact-checked and vetted online platform of treatment centers to help individuals find the right path to recovery.
So, Terry, I don't think people realize how difficult it is for someone with a mental health condition to ask for help when they're struggling. We might not fully understand what's going on or that there's a name for why we can hardly get out of bed, keep our space or ourselves clean. We might be embarrassed to admit we need help. We might think no one understands, and so there's no point in reaching out. We may have tried in the past and been met with judgment or apathy, or any number of other obstacles.
And that is why we, family members, friends, loved ones, coworkers, any caring human, we need to learn ways to reach in, to offer needed help and support when we notice a change in someone's behavior, to make ourselves available to talk or to listen, even if those conversations may be unfamiliar or even uncomfortable for us. Because to put it bluntly, saying, "They didn't tell anyone," or "I would have helped if I'd known," at their funeral is too little too late. And learning to be there for someone who's struggling can make a difference.
Today and in next week's episode, we're going to offer 11 specific ways that people have modeled compassion to our return guest, Sam Dylan Finch. He made the list to show that there is so much that we can do to help someone struggling with a mental health crisis. And the more familiar we are with what support looks like, the more likely we'll be able to offer it to people who really need it. Here again is Sam, a passionate mental health and LGBTQ plus advocate, blogger, and suicide attempt survivor, giving his voice to depression.
Sam says, for a number of reasons, there is no roadmap for supporting someone struggling with their mental health.
Like, I think there are plenty of people in my life who have wanted to be supportive and just really didn't know what that would look like. And I think part of it too is that we just need to normalize the idea that someone can offer that support without being asked to offer it, which was like a big thing for me, is I think people wait for a written invitation to support folks in their life and they don't need one. There are big and small ways to intervene.
Ideally, Sam reminds, all these would be early interventions. Of course, if we normalize talking about mental health, there'd be so many more opportunities to check in and lend support way before a crisis stage is reached.
One of the things I really like about this list is it's not something you sat and thought, I think I'd really appreciate if someone, you know, These are things people actually did that you know helped. And I think that makes it very, very valuable. So let's start with number one. You said the people who supported you did a lot more listening than talking.
Yes, I think one of my like mental health pet peeves is that I think it's a very natural human instinct to try to relate to someone and try to offer like, oh, I went through that. I think that's nice in theory, but so often all of our experiences are so varied and so different that it's not necessarily helpful to just offer support by talking on and on about some experience that may or may not be relevant, or honestly just like rambling about, you know, how great life is, or just offering words that don't necessarily resonate with me.
For those of you who learn by or like to use metaphors, a great one we've heard is that telling someone with depression that they shouldn't be depressed because they have a nice life is just like telling someone with asthma they shouldn't have trouble breathing when there is so much air around. Instead, try saying less and listening more.
Sometimes, like, the most meaningful support that I got was just someone sharing space with me and being willing to listen to what was affecting me, as opposed to projecting what they assumed was happening or what they had experienced. Because oftentimes, a lot of my loved ones haven't struggled with the things that I have. And I don't need them to pretend that they have. I don't even need them to have a point of reference. I just need them to keep an open mind and open heart and just be present so that they can learn about what I'm going through rather than assuming that they have all the answers from the get-go.
Nice. I like that you use the phrase, follow my lead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's always a great rule when it comes to mental health, that you don't actually have to have the answers for that person up front or even at any point. Oftentimes we have good instincts about what we need if folks are willing to give us that room.
Nice. Number two is closely related. They were sure to ask what I needed instead of assuming.
Yeah, I really hate the assumption component that always seems to come with mental illness. I think because stereotypes are often how people first learn about mental illness, unfortunately, a lot of folks think that they know what we need. When in reality, it's not always reflective of what we're actually wanting in that moment. So it's always better to ask.
Ask. Ask what you might be asking, especially if you've had no experience of your own with mental health struggles. Well, Sam wrote a blog that we're going to unpack that offers specific and appreciated suggestions, including asking, is there a particular activity we can do together that might take your mind off things? As strange or simple as that may sound, it's a suggestion we've heard from several of our guests.
I think people often think that they have to do some kind of savior-esque gesture, like they have to do something big and extravagant, when in reality, a lot of us just need a distraction. And I think there's sometimes this goal, like, I have to make this person feel better, but you don't. I mean, that would be lovely if you could, but oftentimes we can't. When you're in the middle of some kind of mental health episode, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. You're in it for the long haul sometimes. So rather than making this impossible goal of, I have to heal this person or make them feel better, sometimes it's enough to just like sit down and play video games and tune out for a while. Like, those are important coping skills. Sometimes coping is enough. We don't always need someone to fix everything.
Another often needed and welcomed offer is, do you need help with anything around the house?
I would say far and away the things that have stuck out to me as being the most helpful when I'm in the middle of a crisis is when folks just offer to do dishes or offered to help me get groceries or all of the day-to-day things that I was really struggling to do on my own. Sometimes when you're in a really, really tough spot, you have to prioritize, and oftentimes it means that housework or just making certain phone calls, those things fall away really quickly. Mm-hmm. I know that you can tell when I'm struggling with my mental health oftentimes because literally everything around me in my apartment is just a disaster.
Yes.
Because it's the first thing to go.
Yes.
So really having folks willing to just step in and say, I can help you with that. It's so simple, and you don't have to be an expert. You don't have to be a therapist. You don't have to be some kind of researcher to step in and help someone do dishes. But it does make a really big difference.
I hate when my outside world looks like my inside world feels.
Yeah, because it's just a constant reminder. It makes it difficult to kind of escape that headspace because it's also your external space. So they just kind of reinforce each other.
Sam also suggests some very practical but important questions like, have you been eating, drinking water, talking to people, taking your meds, sleeping? The basics, Sam says, are so important in mental health, yet often taken for granted.
Some examples I include, could you send someone a favorite takeout meal or a reusable water bottle? Can you send them a text every morning to say hello? A text every evening to see if they've taken their medications? Could you pay for a subscription to a meditation app to help with sleep? Just anything concrete that can help address those basics can make a really big difference. Because unfortunately, those things fall away really quickly too. Because really, we're just trying to get through the day. And we're not always thinking, okay, I need 4 glasses of water today.
Moving on to the third important way people can support us in a mental health crisis, and we can support each other, learn about your loved one's disorder. We focus on depression in this podcast, but it could be anxiety, bipolar disorder, or any number of other challenges. Don't ask us to explain what's going on while it's going on.
So whenever someone can take that upon themselves to say, okay, I'm going to do my best to learn about this so I can limit the amount of questions that I'm asking and maximize the most effective support that I can offer is incredibly helpful.
And it isn't, I would think, just not having to explain it to somebody. It's the respect that's being shown by trying to learn about what you're experiencing.
Absolutely. It's an amazing gesture to say, you know, not only do I care about you as a person and want to support you, but I'm willing to put in the time and the effort to demonstrate to you that I'm invested in understanding your experiences and I'm invested in figuring out how I can best support you through this.
The fourth suggested way to support someone who's struggling is to send a thoughtful gift that they can physically hold on to.
Yeah, I think people underestimate the impact that tangible reminders can have on people. Not that a card will ever replace some of the other things on this list, but I think when I've been in like a depressive frame of mind, it's really easy for me to tell myself that no one cares. It's kind of difficult to deny that when like you're holding a necklace that your parents gave to you when you were diagnosed. When you hold on to that and you say, well, it's kind of hard to refute the fact that they actually do care because I'm holding something that they gave me to indicate that they did.
And the fifth and final suggestion for this episode is a really important one, and that is to take a team approach to supporting the person.
It's totally unreasonable to say that one person can support you through a mental health crisis. Like, it's just not, even if it were doable, it's not fair to that person to try to take all of that on single-handedly. And when I've had some kind of mental health crisis, without a doubt, it has needed a team approach. Because people have jobs and lives and emotional capacities, and they can only offer so much. So what I found really helpful was when folks that were supporting me were actually in communication with each other.
And how exactly do you make that happen? By communicating with the person needing help and asking them directly, who else is supporting you through this? And how can I get in touch with them if something comes up?
So right from the get-go, having names and contact information, if there's a crisis, is so important. There was a point a couple of years ago at which I was suicidal and I was in a very dangerous situation. And the one person that I had reached out to was a researcher at that time and was literally in a lab and couldn't leave. It just wasn't feasible to leave. But they already had contact information for a couple of other people, including my roommate, which kind of leads into the next question. Who do you live with currently? And how can I reach them if I'm concerned about your safety? So this friend knew how to get in touch with my roommate, who actually was available. So having that contact information, if there is a situation that requires some kind of immediate action, you never want to rely on one person to be the one taking that immediate action, because one person could have their phone turned off. They could be in a research lab. They could be with family dealing with some other kind of crisis, or just not prepared to help someone, not emotionally ready to do that. And just being connected in that way is just another safety net to make sure that there is support if something comes up.
Another benefit of the buddy system is that the support person may need a little backup. It's like that directive you get from flight attendants to put on your oxygen mask first in an emergency. We have to be okay ourselves to be able to offer help to others.
Because I will be totally honest, as someone who has supported a number of people through mental health crises, it can be frustrating and scary. And you never want to take out those frustrations or fears on the person that you're trying to support. Having someone that I could talk to and just be like, gosh, they called me 6 times today. I love them to death, but I really wish that they had more support right now. Being able to say that to someone, being able to team up and just have space to have those emotions, not only made it healthier for me, but it made me a better support to the person I was trying to help out.
And one last fabulous suggestion for how to take a team approach to supporting someone. It's one, like many of Sam's suggestions, that we haven't heard of before or thought of on our own. Ask, can we compile a list of phone numbers that you can call if I'm not available to support you?
And that doesn't just include friends or family. That includes hotlines, local clinics, a therapist, a psychiatrist. And so you have that point of reference so that you know that there's a list of other folks that they can reach out to. And I think in general, it's always good for someone to have 3 phone numbers that they know that they can call no matter what, or text, because I know that calling is a whole other beast for a lot of folks. That's why we are really lucky to live in a day and age where we have something like that crisis text line that exists, so that for folks who just really can't pick up the phone, they still have options.
The Suicide and Crisis Lifeline in the U.S., which offers 24/7 support either by text or chat, is 988. If you're outside of the U.S., please check for crisis and warm lines in your area so you can program those into your phone and not have to look them up and do the research when you are maybe in a place of crisis or helping someone who is.
So that's where we'll stop for this episode. We will unpack 6 more suggested ways to support someone who's struggling next week, and we will link to Sam's full list with each episode.
Okay, so Terry, this is the thing that really, you know, that I wanted to highlight, at least from what Sam said in this episode, and that has to do with what he said about what an amazing gesture it was for him. If somebody was willing to put in the time and the effort to understand the lived experience of depression and invested in figuring out how to best support, you know, during that time. I think whatever that the person you care about has, if you take the time to do just a little bit of research, just a little bit of a dive on the interwebs and see what at least the basics are.
Yes.
And then write down a couple of questions that you might have. Like you could say to this person, I read that people with depression sometimes struggle to keep up with, you know, basic chores. Is that true for you? And if so, could I help you with that? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to become an expert. As if, right. And you don't want to make assumptions about what you're reading, that those are true for the individual person that you know who is struggling.
Right.
But I think Sam made such an important point that my clients bring up all the time, which is, you know, my family or my friends or, you know, people I work with know that I have this diagnosis or they know I'm struggling with depression, and no one's even bothered to even figure out what that looks like. Mm. They don't know anything about it. They've got the assumptions that they have. They have whatever portrayals on television or series are, but they haven't gone and done a little bit of the footwork just to even have an informed conversation. Mm-hmm. And so your level of support is, I think, going to be hampered if your basic understanding of depression and what the depressed experience is and what people need when they're depressed is limited.
I totally agree. And in addition to the value in understanding it a little better, it also would remove that, hey, tell me what this is about. What are you feeling? What are you thinking? What do you need? You know, that is just too much to fire at somebody when they're in the middle of it. You know, it's like, don't make me explain this to you now. You know, sometime when I'm well, we can sit down and have a chat about depression in general and mine in particular, but not right now. Right now, I need some help. And you know, there definitely has to be a bit of the responsibility on the other side if we really want to be loving and caring supports.
Exactly. I mean, when you have limited energy and your thoughts are not working well, and then we're going to ask that person to explain and educate someone else about their condition. Right. I agree with you. It's not fair. It could definitely lead to somebody feeling like, why bother?
Right.
You know, if I've got to get you up to speed, you know, I don't even have the energy to, to do that. I'm just trying to say help. So yeah, that's why I do think it's so important just to do a little research, listen to a few podcasts. Then you at least have something that you could ask an informed question about, you know, yes. And maybe come up with those ideas about, you know, again, would support look like this to you?
And the next steps, you know, more importantly, perhaps than, well, I won't say perhaps, more importantly than, you know, some people with depression have trouble keeping their space clean. Can I help you with yours if that's a thing with you? Mm-hmm. It's also some people with depression have suicidal thoughts and aren't safe alone. Are you there?
Yes.
Because I could come right over or you could stay with me for a while. You know, there are levels to this. And the more we know, the more we can ask specifically. I had a situation just last weekend where in the course of the conversation, I had to ask that question. And I said, mm-hmm. Are you suicidal now? Are you safe alone? And he said, no, and has since gotten himself help and is in a safer place. But you have to ask. You have to know to ask. And that's where that knowledge can come in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another thing that Sam said that I thought was really important is not to wait for an invitation to help somebody.
Yes.
They don't have to throw up a red or a white flag and, you know, have the energy and the words and the everything else, the belief that you would care and step in to be able to ask for it. You can say, hey, you know, you seem different or you're doing this more or this less. Is there a way I can support you?
I love that.
And
I love that.
Me too.
Yeah, and I really think it really is just something small. Like, you know why you're wondering if somebody's in trouble or struggling. And so take a moment and think about it. And then you really do just have to do what you said. It's like, this is what I've observed. You know, mm-hmm. You haven't been coming to this. It seems like things are more of an effort for you right now. I just want to check in and see, are you okay? Are you struggling? Because it's okay to tell me. And I just think that's a great thing to do.
Yeah, I have time to listen to your answer, mm-hmm. and I care to hear it. Mm-hmm. That would be so nice to hear.
That's what people say all the time. I just want to know that somebody is safe and that they're okay listening.
Mm-hmm. So we will be back next week with the rest of Sam's list of these 11 things that people have done for him to show that they care, and we can all learn from these examples and then try to use them in our own lives to support the people we know who need a little bit of extra help.
We truly hope that our podcast brings a little more understanding, helps you better articulate and reflect on your own experience with depression, or better understand how to support someone else who is struggling.
If this episode has been of comfort or value to you, know that there are hundreds of others like it in our archive, which you can easily find at our website, givingvoicetodepression.com. And remember, if you're struggling, speak up, even if it's hard. If someone else is struggling, take the time to listen.